Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 168 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again today on the show. We've got tons of stuff. It's going to be a little bit of a long one, but we're going to feature Ashley Stuckless of High BC, a show on WOW TV. He's coming on to do a blow-by-blow account of our bear hunting trip. So if you've been waiting for that, today's the day. We're also going to have Wilson on briefly to talk about a couple of stories, a bit of an accounting of our AGM, at least at some level, not the full story, but we'll do that in the following episode. And also, apparently, a gun was brought in to the Saskatchewan legislature. That's a big story, apparently. We're going to take a look at that. All that and more CCFR Radio starts right now. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR Radio Podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR. With a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter, they have what you need. Plus, free shipping over $250, which includes ammo, or flat rate shipping of $17 under $250. Some conditions apply. Subscribe to their weekly newsletter to get first access to the hottest deals. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. All right, via Skype, we've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR, apparently. Wilson!
You know, between AGM and National Range Day, I've heard that yelled an awful lot lately. Wilson!
Yeah, I'm not sure why that caught on, but I'll take it, I guess.
I'll take it too. It's my name.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I have this big long discussion coming up with Ashley Stuckless from High BC that is a blow by blow account of my entire bear hunt. And I think that conversation was really long. So we're going to try to make this, we're going to take a couple of these topics. We're going to touch on them, but we're going to discuss them in more detail in the next podcast because I don't want this to be too long. And, you know, it'll be better if we aren't rushed on a few of these things. So just so everybody knows, we're going to thank everybody that was involved in the AGM. We're not going to do that this time. We have a couple we want to talk about, but not everybody. We're going to talk about that in detail a lot more in the next one. And then there's a couple of other things we're going to expand upon. So if you think that we've been too brief on a couple of these topics, just so you know, we're going to bring them back in the next podcast and then we'll get into the details because they're important. Now, Excellent. We had our AGM. It was awesome. It was in Calgary. And why don't you just give us just a super quick description and talk about our guests.
We had an awesome time, actually. We had about 160 members come out, which was awesome. We had the Alberta Minister of Justice, Mickey Amory, come out. He did a really funny speech. It was awesome. Jim Shockey, Canadian hunting legend, of course, was our keynote speaker. And he hung out there all night long. So everybody got a chance to talk to him and get pictures and have a chat. And they went back and forth between the two of them. It was great. So just a really big effort by everybody, but I think it was all worth it.
Awesome. And I would agree with everything that you just said. Now, we're not going to go through and thank everybody, but there's three names that I just want to bring up. Scott Carpenter, who is currently the president of the CCFR. Scott did a ton of work on the AGM. And I mean, a ton of work is like all the auction items, almost all of them. He secured those, got all the information, got that information to the auctioneer, and actually physically brought them all the way to the AGM and took them all home to be shipped and all that stuff. So Scott did a tremendous amount of work on this. And also Jason Philp. Jason is a field officer, longtime field officer of the CCFR, done a ton of work for the CCFR, and he really he went above and beyond on the AGM. And I also want to thank Sean Alexander from Kailani Sports. Mm-hmm. So they make drinkware and paddleboards and coolers and all the rest of that stuff. Sean donated a bunch of prizes and he donated a drink tumbler. I don't have one with me, but you'll see, I'll have something even better. But he donated, you know, 200 of those, one for every single person, monogrammed with the CCFR logo for everybody that came to the to the AGM. So I would just want to thank Sean for that. It was a really nice gift. And I'm also having Sean on for an interview about partnering with people that could get you canceled. So we're going to talk all about that. I actually have the interview in studio with him this week, and that'll be on the next podcast. So I just want to get stuff. There, so many more people did just tremendous things for us that we need to thank, and everyone that donated prizes, but we got to keep it going for this time. So just hang on to that thought till the next episode.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, the one story that we did want to focus on, which is pretty interesting, is the story of Jeremy Harrison, who's an MLA from the Saskatchewan legislature. Why don't you give us kind of an overview of this story? It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting story out of Saskatchewan, and I guess I didn't really have my eyes on it right away, but now that I've been looking into it, it's actually quite amazing. So you've got Randy Weeks, who is a longtime Saskatchewan MLA himself. He's been a longtime Speaker of the House, and his his constituency was contested, which means somebody, you know, somebody challenged him to run in it from the same party, and he lost. So, you know, basically that's what happens. You get ousted. It happens sometimes when someone's been there a very long time. Well, anyways, this happens, and next thing you know, he's upset. He cuts up his Sask party membership, posts a picture on Twitter, says enough is enough, and comes out with this story that another MLA from the same party, Jeremy Harrison, who was at the time, he was the government house leader, and he's also a senior minister, saying that he's been harassing him and intimidating him and, you know, almost threatening him with firearms. And so this is this crazy story, right? Even said that he brought a gun to the legislature. So, you know, I was like, what? Like, this sounds crazy. And of course, once you dig into it, it's not nearly as wild as Mr. Weeks would have you believe. It's a case of a minister in Saskatchewan, right? Everybody goes hunting. The end of the day during hunting season, you're done work. Off to the hunt camp you go. So I guess Jeremy Harrison, who's an MLA, a minister at the time, he was speaker. This was 10 years ago. Government House Leader. 10 years ago, he was on his way to do a hunting trip and had to stop by the office. And he debated, what do you do with the hunting rifle in the car? And of course, he's in his hunting camo and he's going to the camp. So he stops at the legislature building. Doesn't want to leave his rifle in the car or his shotgun, whatever it was. And he takes it inside, tosses it in his office and, locks it in his office, goes and does what he had to do, why he stopped there, and then heads off to the hunt camp. No big deal. 10 years later, of course, now it's national news because it's like, well, he brought a gun into the legislature and, you know, it's just sort of the hyperbole around this. It's blown up into just the wildest story. Randy Weeks' whole Twitter feed is nothing but Jeremy Harrison and talking about how he's been intimidated and bullied by him. Yet he never said a word until he lost his constituency contest. So, yeah, anyways, I know that there's been a lot of people writing in to both the Premier, Scott Moe, who's the leader of that party, obviously, and the opposition, to sort of defend Jeremy Harrison. Like, he, you know, you're making it seem like he went in there waving a gun around, which is entirely not the case. And it's just become this big embroiled mess and a complete campaign to cancel Jeremy Harrison for nothing more than being a gun owner, really. At the end of the day, that's what it's about.
Well, I think some other details of the story is, number one, that's not against the rules.
No.
Number two, he stopped at security and said, hey, this is what I want to do. I don't want to leave my hunting rifle in the car, you know, and I just got to grab some things from the office or whatever it was. And they're like, yeah, no problem.
Yep.
You're a sitting MLA. You know, like you're not some guy off the street saying, hey, can I bring my hunting rifle into the, and then it was never brought into the chamber. It was brought into his office. He collected his stuff or signed his documents or whatever, and then left.
Right.
And went hunting. And I saw just a snippet of the story, which is this guy brought a gun into the legislature, which implies into the chamber. And, you know, you're conjuring up visions of like everybody's in there and he brings this rifle in like it's some kind of strange, like a public shooting averted kind of thing.
Yes.
And he told security about it, asked them about it. And then, he was gone. And then I think they highlighted that he was wearing camo as if that's like some kind of threat. Like,
oh yeah. They called him fatigues.
You know,
like, dude, come on.
It's like, these are the things that make people lose faith in the system, in institutions. This is what makes people cynical about politicians. Like, this kind of stuff has to stop. Like, I hate it if the conservative side does it. Like, I hate it. It's stooping to the level of the crazies on the far left. But it's stuff like that is the reason why the political discourse has gone in off the road and into the ditch. And how we get it out of the ditch, I don't know. Anyway.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on. That's quite a story, though.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
I didn't see it either, but it's quite a story. National Range Day, you did a couple things for your National Range Day, and you have some other information about that.
Oh, did I ever? So you know me, I can't just do anything on a low-key level. Everything's got to be a complete circus. And National Range Day at Eastern Ontario Shooting Club in Ottawa was no different. So we had probably about 500 people come through the gates of the club, which is amazing. We probably had about 40 volunteers. Between CCFR help and range help. We had the Bouncy Castle Village going on. We had free popcorn. We had an ice cream truck added this year. We had axe throwing. We had cotton candy. We had a barbecue going on. Cowboy Action had a demo happening. We even had reenactors from the Ontario Reenactment Society come down in full costume and regalia. It was actually super cool. The kids loved it. A free kids steel silhouette range. It was just a wonderful, beautiful, hot, sunny day in Ottawa. And I think everybody had a great time. It was exhausting, but well worth it. And we can't wait for next year.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of events that went on across the country. And that's good to see, because we didn't have a lot of time to push it this year as we did in the first year. And so I guess all that to say, we would always appreciate it if people took it upon themselves to promote it and to make stuff happen. But hopefully next year we'll have a little bit more time for us to give that another big push. But I think it still did fairly well. So one thing I will caution you on is be careful with the bouncy castles, because bouncy castles equal insurrections. Okay.
Yes.
So I think I did see a Gadsden flag, you know, where it says, don't tread on me. And then the coiled snake that's going to bite. And there was one that said, don't tread on me. And it had a bouncy castle image in the middle. Oh. So you got to be careful with that. People, they get triggered, right?
There was a 5-year-old boy who, you know, he was bouncing like crazy in there, knocking over the little girls. And yeah, I kind of think maybe there was an insurrection in the planning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That sounds like extreme behavior.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, good work on that. That's it. That's the end of our list.
All right. Awesome.
Well, thanks for the update. And we will talk more about those other things that we mentioned in the next episode. So we'll see you then. All right. We are back. So I guess this is the part that a lot of you out there are waiting for. I've got Ashley Stuckless from High BC, another show on WOW TV. I went hunting for the first time in my life with Ashley. How's it going, man?
It's going good, Rod. Thanks a lot for having me back on the show. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Okay. So a lot of people are waiting to hear this story. It's a few funny parts in it, and we've got some B-roll, so it should be good. This is going to be the version for the podcast. So you're going to get a lot more detail than what we told on the TV show, because we were time constrained. But anyway, just to set it up real quick, we took two vehicles. It was me and Scott Carpenter in my truck. So Scott's the current president of the CCFR, also one of the owners of International Shooting Supplies. And then we were following you in your truck, which was you, Kevin Bustard, a good friend of yours, an accomplished hunter, and then your friend Jake. So who's Jake again?
Jake has just joined us. This was the first full hunt, second time getting together to film. But Jake is a really good Sony shooter. I'd put a sort of a call out to, you know, folks that might be interested to learn a little bit about hunting that had some experience shooting on Sony. So we sort of have a horse trade going where he comes out and helps with the capture because, you know, up to this point, I basically filmed 99% of everything myself to help me with the capture in exchange for, you know, some hunting knowledge, learning a few areas. And so far it's been working out fantastically. He really, you know, he was up bear hunting this last weekend, texting me, you know, with some of the areas at, so I could do some desktop and help him around. And then, having him out there with the horsepower on the camera has been a bit of a game changer, honestly.
Awesome. So we left the Lower Mainland in the morning. I think we hooked up at 8 o'clock or something like, or 10 o'clock. I can't remember. But, I remember you afterwards I knew, but basically we were on the freeway having to drive 4 or 5 hours and you're doing like 90 kilometers. And then I said, you know, I was with Scott. I'm like, what is going on with this guy? So I called you on the phone and I'm like, hey man, are you on bail or something like that? And then I said, and then I seem to remember like you said something derogatory and then hung up on me because we don't know each other very well. So I was like, okay, well, this is going well so far. And then you were like doing like, I don't know, 125 after.
Well, yeah, then I, you know, I was on the phone trying to get a few work things sorted out as I'm leaving town. Folks on that, and it was 110 kilometer speed limit zone where I was doing 90. So, yeah, so it was me and Kevin laughed about that quite a bit and then proceeded to, I think I seen six police cars doing radar and traffic on the highway that way out. So I was joking that I'd be sending you the invoice if I got a ticket.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, it is still my discretion on what we pay as far as invoice is concerned. But anyway, all right, let's get going. All right, so we showed up at camp, and we were just outside of Rock Creek, British Columbia, which is probably an hour and a half east of Soyuz, BC. And we were up at elevation, set up a camp at around 3 p.m. And then right after we had camp set up, you're like, well, let's hunt for the evening, because I guess that's a thing. So kind of what happened, the abbreviated version of what happened there.
Yeah, well, as soon as we get it set up there, evenings are typically, you know, the most prime time for bear hunting, for all animal hunting, actually, but for bear hunting specifically. So I really didn't want to burn that first evening just relaxing. So, you know, we went straight to work. You know, we ended up hiking probably about 6 kilometers, maybe a touch more actually, and about 300 or 400 meters elevation gain. So, you know, it was a good opener. On the way up, we had seen some boar breaks, which got me pretty excited because the weekend before I'd seen five bears in the area, including a couple nice boars, one chocolatey red boar that was pretty impressive. So I was hopeful that that we were going to get on them fairly quickly. So we just took it up to the height of land to see if we could get on the glass and find them. But yeah, unfortunately, that first night we weren't able to see any game.
Well, it was a lot of hiking, and I was like, oh man. By the time we got back to camp, I don't know, whatever, 9 p.m. or something, I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to last all weekend. Because, I mean, I think even that was probably the longest hike I had done in years as it was. But anyway, we got back to camp. I don't think we went, by the time we started a fire and had dinner and, you know, shot the breezer a little bit, I don't think we got to bed till like midnight. And then we're up at 5 the next morning, which was Friday, which I'm like, I don't know how many times this is going to happen, right? That was a killer hike with, you know, a gun and a pack and everything. And I was like, we'll see how long I'm going to last. But we got up and we were hunting right away on Friday morning. And we, again, hunted right out of camp, but covered a lot of ground. I think we did probably about 400 meters of elevation, 8 or 10 kilometers. Like, it was pretty crazy for my standards, at least.
Yeah, no, for sure. It was, you know, I basically hunted the area as I would, you know, with or without you. So I was super happy, you know, that you just ground it out. I mean, you know, I might have seen some huffing and puffing a couple times, but it's not that I wasn't either. So I was just pretty happy. You just were right there on my heels the whole time. And then, as a matter of fact, a few times, especially at the height of land, you were just charging out. Like, I was sitting glassing and you weren't happy unless you're looking over the next ridge. So that was nice to see, you know, and that's really what it takes to find these guys.
Well, that's just based on peer pressure, man. That wasn't really me.
I was told that, like, there's no doubt that the expectation was to lean on you a bit, but you took it for real. So you deserve the props that I'll give you for it.
Oh, hey, thanks, man.
Yeah. It's not a platitude. It's real. Like, you actually did it. So I was pretty happy with that, because, you know, we hadn't ever been out in the bush together, and you don't know, like, I've had some people that, you know, that wouldn't have been able to do what we did, for sure. You know, quite a few, actually. So I was happy that, whether it was peer pressure or not, that you did it without complaining. So that was good.
I probably complained a little bit, but anyway,
inside, that's your internal monologue.
Yeah,
that you were smart enough to keep it to yourself, put it that way.
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe I was just thinking, did I say that out loud? But anyway, we put in a lot of effort that morning. I ended up seeing some grouse. I ended up seeing 4 deer, but we didn't see any bears.
No.
Anyway, we made it back to camp, I think. I think I got a note here. It was, 2 or 3 p.m. We were back at camp. I'm like, I need a nap. And then, but you weren't ready to quit. So you and Kevin went and did some scouting around. And much to my, to my pleasure, we weren't going to do any hiking, hunting for the rest of the day. We did road hunting. And I think we covered somewhere around 150 kilometers of logging road, which was a lot. But we ended up seeing one bear there. Well, you saw him. I actually didn't end up seeing him.
Yeah, I seen him. He didn't hang around too long, but he just dove down off the side of the road there. He's a 2.5-year-old, maybe a 3.5-year-old young bear. So right away I was on the brakes and back to you. And I really enjoyed, you were just jumped out, gun, got it ready. And we hustled in, but unfortunately we weren't able to catch up with him. I think probably if we would have caught up with him, we might have gave him a pass anyway. Even though it's your first bear, I still kind of think he might not have been the right guy. But regardless, we got back in the truck, and you know, within a minute of being back in the truck, Kevin Buster breaks in the song about Little Rod Bear. And how handsome Little Rod Bear is, and for 20 minutes, like, he has a stick-to-itness that most people don't, and he just kept hammering on it. And Jake was secretly filming it in the back seat too, which made it extra special when I was looking at that, just having a roar. So, you know, that's now an official thing. We were out again hunting last weekend, and every time we'd see a mature bear, but a very young or medium bear, we just call him Little Rod Bear. Now that's just a thing.
Well, that's good. Well, at least something came out of, what was it? It was Friday afternoon. During our road hunting, I do want to emphasize how determined we were and unstoppable we were, because there was multiple trees across the road that we sawed and hauled out of the way and cleared and pushed around, with ticks falling out of these things right all over us. We were not going to be defeated. So, you know.
Yeah, no, and it was like, and of course, my after, you know, us chatting and me telling you you didn't need your bring your chainsaws back up, mine is freshly tuned up, it immediately let me down. So we ended up having to handsaw some of these trees, and you know, they're over 12 inches for sure, a couple of them, and there was half a dozen trees to cut through, but kind of added to the stick-to-it-ness that we were after bears, and we were taking it serious. So
yeah, we weren't taking no for an answer, that's for sure.
No.
What's next? Oh yeah, so we ended up, and you know, like I say, we did probably 125 to 150 kilometers on logging roads, like, and that even in itself is a rough ride, right? But nonetheless, back at camp around 7:30 or 8-ish, got the fire going, ate some food, and then back to bed at like midnight again. And you know how I would kept going. This was Friday night, right? How I kept going, I don't know. But anyway, up at 5 a.m. again. But we tried something different this time. You and Kevin and Jake went to glass an area around power lines, I think is what it was, yep. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then Scott and I think I had something to eat. And me and Scott ate some food. And then it was just a little ways from the camp, but it was a really great vantage point. You can see just, across the valley a long way, all in our valley a long way. We covered a lot of area there. So Scott and I showed up. We were all glassing different directions. And then I think I might have been the first to hear some yelping, some barking, which, you know, there's no dogs out there. So it had to be coyotes or something canine. And then I think you heard it too, right?
Yeah, I heard it too. Like, you had hiked up just for a look around, and, you know, you basically went in. I think they were firing off because they seen you come up that ridge line. So, you know, and you definitely would have heard it first, but then, you know, between hearing it and then I sort of turned around at the same time you were turning around to sort of, what's that? What's going on? Kind of scenario. And I'm like, oh yeah, coyotes yiping on the hill there. So I just went into a pretty good jog up the hill with the gun. And then by that time, you know, I'm looking around up there. We're both looking around, and then the rest of the team joins up with us. Everyone's looking. We spot what looks like a very large canine on the skyline. I had thought potentially that it was a wolf that had heard the coyotes baying and just came out to sort of, you know, take him out as competition. But it ended up being a coyote and just looking down the hill, trying to spot us. And 550 yards, I ended up touching up a shot just as Jake got the telephoto lens on the coyote. I was holding for about 30 seconds to try and give him the time, and fortunately was able to get on it. And as soon as the coyote took a turn to leave, I touched off and it was coyote down. So
yeah, you blasted her.
yeah.
And I was there too. I'll witness it. It was 550 yards, 552, I think you ranged it at. Yep. So that was an awesome shot.
Yeah, thanks. It was good. Nice when it works out. And you got the reward of having to come with me to hike up the hill, which was the you know, shortest distance, but the steepest ascent that we took in our trip. So, yeah, there's a couple cliffs there and what have you. So good fun.
Well, one of the things I learned about hunting is just as we were kind of getting up close to the point where we figured the coyote was, you said, this is the part where we all start arguing about where it was. And I'm like, oh, I guess that's a thing. And I can understand that, because it always does look a little bit different if you walk 50 feet in one direction. You're like, oh, where was that again?
Yeah, for sure. And you were in on it like an old hand at it, for sure. Like right away, you were holding your ground at where you thought he was, which you end up being right, which was a little annoying, but that's fine. So I came down from the cliff above that I thought it was on. So, But yeah, we were able to recover the coyote, and it was kind of neat.
Well, I was standing firm about where it was because I didn't want to climb. I didn't want to keep climbing up, probably is what it was. But anyway,
yeah,
I was already done. So anyway, the good news is we got a shot of that that coyote. So quite a creature, a lot of teeth in that mouth. But when we were up there, we heard the guys, Kevin and Scott, we had left them down there, and they're screaming up to us, "Hey, you know, huge bear, get down here." I'm like, oh, man, all the way back down. So we hike down, we hook up with those guys, and why don't you just give a brief description of kind of what Kevin saw and how far away it was?
Yeah, so Kevin was just continuing to glass around that power line area, and then about 6 kilometers away on the power line, he located what was definitely a very large bear. Like, if Kevin Bustard is telling you it's the second largest bear he's ever seen, you can guarantee you're dealing with a pretty big bear. So immediately we set to affixing a nickname for him, which was Elvis, because he was clearly the king. We had grouped up to sort of have a discussion about what would we do next. And with him being 6 kilometers away, we just said there's only one decision. We got to go for him. So, you know, it ended up being a 60 or 70 kilometer drive around to get to the other side of this major drainage we were in. And then once we got over there, it was a little too early still for the evening hunt. The thermals were still going up. So we then proceeded to go in about a kilometer away, and we stopped and we had a good late lunch and just waited for some time to pass so we'd have the thermals in our favor. So, you know, we ended up going back in there about 6 o'clock in the evening-ish, I guess. And the wind checker was calling good wind. So we went in and hid behind a cedar tree till dark. And unfortunately, all we were able to see was a couple mule deer, a doe with 2 fawns, actually.
Yeah. Well, we called them in with a distress call, I guess, right?
We did. Yeah, we did for the last hour, because he hadn't come out at the beginning of sort of the primetime feeding area. We thought we'd push it a little bit, and the fawn distress call can work really well in the spring for bears. All we called out was the fawn, which or the doe with a couple fawns in tow there. So
yeah. Anyway, unfortunately, Elvis had left the building, and we drove back the whatever 80K back to our camp. Showed up there about 10:30, and again, was up till about, actually, I think we were up till about 12:30 on Saturday night. Yeah. And then we were up easily by 6 again. I don't know why I didn't have like a heart attack or something. But anyway, we didn't really have any breakfast or whatever. We returned to the power lines where we were the previous morning to glass around, saw nothing. And so I was exhausted, right? And I think most of us were. So it was like, you know what? Let's do a little target shooting, since we're in an area where we can shoot, you know, anywhere from 3 to 1,000 meters. So we did a little bit of target shooting and called it a win from there. All that to say, I actually enjoyed Sunday morning a lot. I can't remember whether we had breakfast or not, but we broke camp and headed out of the area at about 1 p.m. On Sunday, and that was it.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. Me and Kev did do a little Segway drive in the late afternoon on the drive back home. But, you know, we were kind of tired and road weary. It's time to get back home to the family. So we ended up back home in the early evening on the Sunday.
Well, I guess it was a real hunt from the perspective of, It wasn't a canned hunt. In real hunting, whatever, 8 times, if you're just a resident hunter hunting where other people are hunting, 8 out of 10 times, maybe you get nothing. So it was authentic from that perspective, I guess.
Yeah, it's as real as it gets. And, you know, I think it's kind of, it's a blessing in a way for this being your first hunt to not get one, just to just to up your appetite for success and to know that how hard you did work to get in there for that. And just to, you know, that is the purest feeling of being a resident hunter. It's a lot of work for, you know, a modest amount of success, even if you work really hard. But that does make the highs that much higher. Like when it comes together, it's something really special.
Yeah, I can get that 100%. But anyway, all that to say, thank you for taking me on my first hunt. I guess you and I, we may go for another bear hunt, I don't know, in the next few weeks. You're very busy. I'm very busy. We're going to try to do it. Maybe I'll end up with a bear this spring. We'll see. Maybe I'll use that tag that I was flashing around.
Yeah, well, I really hope we can get out for at least another 2-3 day hunt here in June. I have a pretty good spot that I like to go in June. So I'm heading back out again this weekend for a backcountry bear hunt. So I'm hopeful that I'll have at least one tag filled before I see you again. But we'll go from there.
Yeah. Well, in any case, it was really great. I really appreciate you taking me out, Ashley. And I guess we're going to stitch this together at some point. And next season, so I guess about around a year from now, we'll have an episode on your show of our bear hunt experience.
Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely have this as what likely, it's either going to be episode one or episode two of next year. So I'll have the turkey hunt, and then probably the Rod Giltaka hunt will be episode two is what I'm envisioning.
Well, maybe we'll have a bear to show from another hunt at the very end to just keep everyone from getting disappointed.
Oh, yeah, well, we'll tie that in. But, you know, I wish we could convince people that there's still a lot to be seen, you know, outside of just that stereotypical grip and grin. But we're definitely going to try for that.
That's so awesome. Anyway, yeah. Thanks so much for taking me, and thanks for coming on today.
My pleasure. Yeah, thanks, Rod.
All right, that's going to do it for episode 168 of the CCFR Radio podcast. I only have a couple more things to go over with you before I let you go, and they're important things. So when Tracy and I were talking about National Range Day, I think one of the things we touched on was that the CCFR didn't have the time this year or last year to really push National Range Day, right? We didn't have time to hold people's feet to the fire and, if need be, guilt them into participating, right? Because that's what it takes to get something, a big idea like this, for it to gather inertia, right? Somebody has to push it. Now, this year, ranges that had never held an event before held events. And I want to give a shout out to an organization, Canada's National Firearms Association, because I saw on their Twitter feed, not only did they promote National Range Day and adopt it for themselves, they held an event, I think, in one or two ranges that they either have insurance agreements with or that they have some association with. And you got to give credit where credit is due, no matter what's going on. So kudos to the NFA for doing that. National Range Day, like, we started it, right? And that's where it ends. It belongs to everybody. So anyone, whether it's the NFA or the maybe another organization that still for the third year running decided they would ignore it and not do it, right? If anyone wants to get in, don't forget, like, we have a whole logo package, trademarks, they're all registered. And all that needs to happen is you email me and go, hey, I want, you know, a 10 or 25 year license to use the logo and sell merch for nothing, for free. And I will send you one, so that you can use the logo, promote all this stuff, keep 100% of the money for yourself. We are only the guardians of the trademark to make sure people aren't reselling the trademark. You can use the logo on your website, you can use the logo to make clothing or merchandise or whatever, keep all the money, just push National Range Day. We have to get it so big that the average non-gun owner on the street will recognize that as a national day, because the government won't help us do it. We have to do it. So that means everybody pulling. You know, the most important thing I want to leave you with in this discussion about National Range Day is if we as a community don't care. If we all let go of who gets the credit for something, there is no limit to what we can achieve. Okay, this is not a CCFR thing. This belongs to everybody. And when we put our money where our mouth is, it never even has to get mentioned again that this is a CCFR thing. It is not. It belongs to everybody. Same thing with the trademark and the fundraising that comes with it. So really important. So again, great job, NFA, for doing that. Really appreciate it. And if we all just do things like this, it'll actually bring us all closer together. So really important. All right. The other thing I wanted to mention is, oh yeah, in the next podcast, I have an interview coming up with Sean Alexander, who owns Kailani Sports. So if you go to KailaniSports.com, I believe is the website, you'll find Kailani Sports, which is a company that makes drinkware, coolers, paddle boards, all kinds of stuff like that. And Sean reached out to us and donated 200 cups. I think I mentioned that with Tracy, right? So that everyone would get a monogrammed CCFR tumbler at the AGM for free. So we charge $35 for them on the website because they are nice, right? Like they are top quality. And Sean put the CCFR logo, wanted to partner with us, put the logo on his website, our logo. And I'm like, are you sure, man? You know, because we, you know, obviously we're normal, good people, but we're the gun lobby. And people smear the gun lobby just for the sake of smearing the gun lobby, no matter who we are, just regular people. They do that all the time. And they try to sink everyone that's associated because that's cancel culture, right? It's a big thing in our culture right now, as you well know. And Sean's like, I don't care. You guys are a good organization. I believe in what you're doing. And I don't care if people like it or not. And I was like, that's very courageous in this political climate. Although I think it's changing. So anyway, I'm bringing all that to say, sorry for taking so long, but I'm bringing Sean on for an interview where we're going to talk about cancel culture. And we're going to talk about the risks and kind of how he sees it and whatever in the next podcast. It's going to be awesome. So you'll hear a little bit more from Sean and the reasons for his decision to partner with the CCFR. So really appreciate that. Okay, I'm done. Thanks for hanging in there with me. Take care, everyone. Thanks for watching. Share the podcast and we'll see you in the next one.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.